We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program an actress best known for her role as Stephanie on Newhart, which earned her 7 Emmy nominations and a Golden Globe nomination as well. You've seen her in shows like Shameless, Designing Women, Looking. She's appeared on stage as well and is the author of a wonderful book entitled Bad Auditions. We are thrilled to welcome Julia Duffy back to the show. Julia, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Rich. I'm glad to be back.
Well, how are you handling this situation? What's going on in your world these days?
Well, I'm in California. We are bi-coastal, but I'm glad that we're in California because I live sort of on top of a hill in the hills, and I don't have to be around people. So it feels very safe. Also, we have masks left over from the fires, so that helps.
Well, we're glad to hear that. Well, it's certainly some very challenging times for everybody. And you've been pretty vocal on social media, and I appreciate that. In, like many of us, I guess we'll call it concern for what seems to be a lack of national leadership on this issue.
Well, yeah. I don't know how anyone can defend it because it's just very simple. I mean, the other day, the statement from the White House, from you-know-who, was the mortality rate is going down, at least in my opinion. How can you have an opinion about math? I mean, those are numbers. You can't have an opinion about it.
Alternative facts, right?
Yeah, alternative facts. There you go, alternative truth.
Well,
it's just crazy. I also, someone I know has died from the virus, and it just changes how you feel about everything because you know it didn't have to happen.
And we're talking about Mark, who was friends with a couple of my friends who had worked with him in New York theater. And what a sad loss, the loss of Terrence McNally the other day as well.
Yes. Terrence was very in a vulnerable position physically. He was already on oxygen, I believe, for other medical conditions. But Mark Blum, this fantastic actor, had no underlying conditions, and he couldn't have been healthier.
Well, and that's the other big lie that is out there is that the only people who will be affected by this are the elderly or those with pre-existing conditions, and that's not the truth. We're seeing people here in the state of Maine. Today we learned of a case of a youngster under 10 years old, and there are plenty of people in their 20s and 30s dying and hospitalized in rough condition here. It may affect some people differently, but it's not discriminating when it comes to individuals.
It's really not. And some of the things you read about the Spanish flu are very interesting, and people should take note. And a very strong theory about why the Spanish flu killed so many young men, so many soldiers, of course, is that their immune systems overreacted because they were young and their immune systems hadn't experienced this before. And it was the immune system's reaction that killed them, because great numbers of young people died from the Spanish flu. Great, huge numbers. And I think that's something that, you know, you have to keep in mind. The virus is very powerful. It needs to be powerful to do what it wants to do. It's a living thing.
Absolutely. We're talking with Julia Duffy here on Downtown. Well, you know, more than ever, we're looking for distractions and things to make us smile and to get away from the reality and the bad news that's out there. And I thought one of the ways we could do it with you this afternoon is to revisit a few of our favorite and maybe some of your favorite episodes from Newhart.
Oh, okay. I hope my memory serves me all right here.
Well, I went back through and made note of a few that I loved along the way and that featured Stephanie. And one of my favorites was in season 2, an episode called Animal Attractions, when Stephanie's husband shows up for the first time.
Oh, yes. Good. You picked something I remember. that was very funny. And the B storyline in that was that, George found a dog and wanted to keep the dog. But the dog's owners were looking for it. And And then my husband came, and everybody met him for the first time, and he was like, what, 75 years old?
Right.
was not what you expected. And, you know, I hadn't been on the show that long, and I thought, it's kind of funny, you know, we're waiting for the dog's owners to come. We're waiting for Stephanie's husband to come. Why isn't there a mistaken identity there? And they're talking about, you know, the wrong person walks in the door, and you can imagine how Bob would react talking about Stephanie, but they're actually talking about the dog. I thought that would be perfect, but I thought, you don't do that. I can't give the writers my idea. So as we were taping that night and I was off to the side talking to the writers, I said, you know, it kind of surprised me that you didn't think about having a mix-up with the two people that were waiting for, one for a dog and one for Stephanie. And they turned to me and said, why didn't you say anything? Okay, so I learned to start saying something, even if you get shut down, because there's no bad ideas in comedy.
One of our favorite guests on the show is the wonderful Bill Sanderson, and one of my favorite episodes was from season 3, when his character Larry decided that he was going to marry Miss Stephanie.
Well, I remember a lot of things with Larry and Miss Stephanie. I didn't quite remember that he wanted to marry me.
Well, because your character gave him a compliment, and he interpreted that as all the opening he needed.
Okay. Because I know there was a show where I had to, that's right, it must have been that show. Isn't this terrible, my memory? But it was hundreds of episodes.
Right.
But I had to go over and break it off with him or give him bad news. So it must have been that episode.
It was.
And I remember there was discussion on why would she do that? Why would she even bother with him? And I said, well, because maybe that's one of her favorite things to do in the world is to break someone's heart. Because it's very flattering that you have to break someone's heart. So they went in that direction. And I do remember that was a very funny bit. I think I had to choose an outfit for breaking someone's heart or something.
I think it also pointed out one of the great things about the character of Stephanie is that in spite of everything and some of the negative aspects, there was never a meanness to that character at all. So even in the breaking up process, she wasn't mean about it.
No, that was something that there were many, many discussions about in the beginning, because there's no point in laughing at her if she's just being mean. I mean, then it's not funny anymore. If she's hostile, I wanted it to be her reactions to people. I didn't want her actually attacking people without a reason. I remember there was a perfect line one time when I said something about, of course, she was raised by her parents to believe she was the most beautiful girl in the world and had a very inflated idea of her looks. And there was some line where I had to say something very self-serving, very conceited. And I had to say to Joanna, you know, you wouldn't understand this. But I made it very sympathetic. I was very sympathetic to Joanna. And also, she was kind of lucky that she had never had to deal with this. And this is the way to do it, rather than someone who makes snide remarks about somebody's looks, because that's just not funny. Unless you're Louis De Palma, you can get away with it.
Well,
but
right.
Generally speaking, a cute young girl can't get away with that kind of thing.
That episode, like a number of them in New Hearts Run, was directed by Dick Martin. Everybody remembers from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. What was he like to work with as a director?
Oh, he's very laid back and a very sweet guy. He's an old friend of Bob. They've been friends forever. I mean, we saw a lot of Dick, not even just when he was directing, but he hung out. I mean, those guys were hanging out in the set. Rickles was hanging out. You can't even imagine how much fun it was.
Was there an episode that stands out to you, a favorite for you to work on?
The episode where I had the baby was really, really funny. And also a series of episodes where Michael and I broke up and he had another girlfriend. And then he fell in love with the girl because she made him peanut butter sandwiches. And so I tried to learn to make peanut butter sandwiches, get him back. And it had some wonderful lines in it. I remember I followed her into the ladies' room to talk to her and said, oh, I thought this was a different room with, you know, ladies on the door. And there were just a lot of things like that during this sequence. It was a few episodes of losing Michael and then getting him back. And putting her down because her hair was reddish. I mean, my God, Michael, her hair is reddish. How could you fall for her? But it was wonderful to have Stephanie have that kind, those doubts about herself. That was something she'd never felt before.
That relationship between you and Peter Scolari's character of Michael, I mean, that really developed as the show went on. And was that something that you guys had to work at, or I mean, obviously you did work at it, but did it come relatively easy, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
You know, working with Peter is the easiest thing in the world, and I'm sure everybody who works with Peter has chemistry with him. It's like improvising when you're working with him, even though you're not improvising. It's just so easy, and it was easy right from the start, and I could tell immediately he did a guest role. And I knew he'd be back, and of course they made him a regular. But I don't think Peter and I ever had to discuss anything very much. We're not at all alike in person, but somehow we always heard it exactly the same way. We had exactly the same feeling about the scene. It required very little discussion, like almost none, because we just followed each other. It's one of those things. We just were on the same wavelength from the start and always.
Julie, I've told you before, I loved your book, Bad Auditions. I've shared it with some of my recent high school theater students as they've gone off into the world of college theater and auditioning at the next level. And one of the things, and we didn't talk about this last time around, was the story you tell about getting to Hollywood when you arrived, fresh off an appearance on Broadway, and how you found out in Hollywood that essentially meant absolutely nothing.
Yeah, they are two different businesses. It's just the way it is. In a place, in a country where you're 3,000 miles between the center of the theater world and the center of the film world, that's the way it's going to be. It's very divided. And you can't escape that fact. Everybody has their own prejudices, whether they're, you know, out there in the open or subtly underneath, they're there, and you can't avoid it. Every business has its problems, you know. Our business isn't special in that way. There are obstacles and difficult things in every occupation. I don't think that it's any different in our business. What I would like to do, though, is find a way to get my book out to the people who need to read it. Because I have found that that generation is not on Twitter, which is really the best place to promote a book.
Right.
They're all on Instagram, but a book isn't a very visual thing, and it doesn't really work on Instagram. And following the book, I had a difficult year, and I really just sort of dropped the whole thing. But I should probably look into doing an audiobook or an ebook and go down that path, because I think that is the way to reach my target audience.
Well, and I think it would be, and is such a valuable resource for young actors, so much guidance. And one of the things you talk about in a terrific chapter, Dear 20-Year-Old Me, was if you could do it again, you would have done a better job using the resources around you, including those veteran actors that you got to work with.
Yes. And I would, just the other day, I was, because we were talking about this actor who passed, Mark Blum, who fascinated me. He's a stalwart of theater in New York and very beloved. But one thing that came home to me when I was rehearsing the play that I did with him, an off-Broadway play about 3 years ago, is don't leave the room when they're rehearsing a scene you're not in.
Mm.
Stay in the room, because you will learn so much from watching the director direct other people, from watching the way other people work, especially when you're working with people of that caliber. You never stop learning. You learn every single day as an actor. You are better today than you were last yesterday, a lot better than you were last week. It's just the way it is. I did worry that the book wouldn't resonate with people because the business has changed so drastically since I started. So much harder to get into. But what I wanted to get across was that, I guess, I had all of the same problems they did. I made all of the same mistakes as everyone else, and I still had a really good career. So everybody makes those mistakes, just in case you think they don't. They do. Everybody does.
The book is called Bad Auditions. Get it? Read it? Get it for a friend as well. Julia Duffy, it is a delight to have you on with us once again. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we wish you well. Stay safe out there, and fortunately, you, like us here in Maine, have a good governor, so hopefully that's going to keep us in good shape.
It's a good time to live in California, I will tell you. I wish my daughter wasn't in New York, but she's doing all the right things. So thank you for giving me, you know, something to do while I'm in isolation.
We're happy to be here for you. Thank you, as always. Be well, Julia.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
It's Julia Duffy with us on Downtown.